Lay.
Sir.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kane is in the building.
Yeah. Alright, already the show goes on all night. Till the morning we dream so long. Anybody ever wonder when they would see the thunder? Just remember when you come up. The show goes on.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast, previewing the 2023 U.S. Open, another major week in golf. It's going to be a fun one down there at L.A. Country Club, and we'll get to that and recap last week's Canadian Open as well. But before we get there, you can find me on Twitter at BDentric, the podcast at Always Press DFS, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods. Jesse, how are we doing, my friend?
I'm good, man. I mean, you didn't even mention the biggest story last week.
Yeah, we can lead in with that if you want, because the reason why, yes, we can obviously talk, we can spend a whole podcast on that if we'd like, but a couple things.
I think we're the only ones who didn't do an emergency podcast.
That's what I was saying. A couple things. I'm pretty sure everyone's heard everyone's thoughts on it by now. And secondly, as kind of we should have expected, I think in the moment on Tuesday, and obviously we're talking about the LIV PGA merger if you're living under a rock, but everyone on Tuesday, like, oh, the world is ending. This is amazing. Twitter was built for days like that. That was awesome. That was perfect. Twitter right there. Yeah. But the problem is when you took a step back, there's a lot of holes in this system. And we're starting to see that each day there's like a new revelation of this might not even happen if you look at the grand scheme of things. So what are your thoughts on the merger or potential merger or whatever we want to call this?
Yeah. So Tuesday, I actually didn't have internet service all day, and I don't have very good cell phone service at my house. Do what?
I hope you went to Starbucks or something.
No, so like it was like a lot of like just sitting on my phone, like fucking refreshing, waiting for the damn cell phone tower to recognize that I'm trying to get something going. But just completely bizarre. Like, but my whole thing with it is, if it's a players, you know, run organization, which they claim it is, like, how do you not clue the players in about this?
Well, there's part of that that it seems like I don't think they're being fully honest on all, like, a lot of the players, yes, 100%. But, like, if you listen to Rory's two press conferences last week, there was so much wishy-washy nature in Rory's talks. Like, it was, well, eventually it was, I knew nothing. And then it was, well, I knew there was discussions. I just didn't know there was a finalized deal. So there was some things where you're sitting there. The one thing, and I've heard it mentioned a few places, which is really actually interesting. It's been almost a week now, because Tuesday would be a week. Still no Eldrick Woods has made any comment on this at all. Zero comments from Eldrick, which is very surprising to me.
It is. I don't know how you don't go to the players and say, hey, listen, here's the deal. We're running out of money.
Yep.
You know, we're in this legal battle with them. Either we drop this case or, you know, I don't know. Like, a lot of it doesn't make any sense, because obviously they knew going into this year they're going to spend a bunch of money. And it's in an effort to fight back against LIV. And then, two, they got into these lawsuits against LIV knowing that lawyers cost a shit ton of money. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me in, like, the explanation. The best explanation that I have, little conspiracy theorist, is that Monahan is going to get paid massively.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Yeah. And, a few things have come out since then. Number one, that they would give the guys who stayed on the PGA Tour equity in this new for-profit company. Okay, that makes a little bit more sense. But otherwise, I'm still, like, just sitting back going, like, Jay Monahan, like, how do you not resign today? You know, I mean, that just blows my mind.
To be able to backtrack on some of the horrific things now that he said.
I mean, it's just
his bank account on some offshore place has to be so flush, it's unbelievable.
Like, it's crazy.
That's like the $1 million man said it, if you're a wrestling person from the 80s, everyone has a price. Jay, they found Jay's price.
Yeah,
they found it very well. This is why Twitter was great. Like, this was straight up the final season of Succession, like, perfectly. If you watch that show, was that show. Like, we had the finale a week ago, and then fucking boom.
I mean, it was the Sunday before, wasn't it?
That they had I'm saying it was like finale merger.
It's just wild to me that they. And then they come out and, you know, they have this interview with him and the head of the PIF together. And he's like, I knew I trusted him within 5 minutes of sitting down with him.
Which is garbage.
Come on, man.
Because of all the things they've said before, that's not true. They actually wanted to sit down with him like 3 years ago, and he said, right. Not a chance. It was just basically the PIF guys, Saudis, whoever you want to say, they called Jay's bluff, and Jay realized he's screwed, and is what it came down to. And then it comes there's a million
things going on. Circling back, I mean, if that's the case, then you go to the PGA Tour players, and you're like, hey, listen, here's the options. What do you guys think I should do? You know what I mean? Versus just come out of nowhere on a random ass Tuesday before the U.S. Open.
Like, broadcasting on national television, right? I'm thinking
CNBC. I mean, like, it's just the whole thing is, I just feel like we're getting like a quarter of the story. There's got to be way more to this than there.
Yeah, and that's why it comes out like, then all of a sudden Jay's going to be in charge of everything, and he's going to be able to tell which guys can come and which guys can't. And PIF guys are just going to sit in the background, basically watch their money is all they're doing here.
And they have a minority stake, quote unquote. Yeah, bullshit.
Like when they are all the money, like how do you have a minority stake when you're all the funds? That's just not how this works, people.
No.
Like an easier example than say Secession, because maybe I already watched it. Think of Barstool Sports. Let's just go there. They had the Chernin Group come in and buy like 49% at one time. So Barstool still kept 1%, but they got all that money. That's not what happened right here. And then all of a sudden Chernin knows the whole thing now, and Barstool's kind of like, doing their thing. That's like just one example. That's just life. That's how business works.
Right.
And somebody doesn't come in and give you all this money to not make more money. That's not how this works. So it's weird. Like every day there is a new bit of news. I actually haven't heard anything today, which is weird. Like people are focused on a major, which is great. That's cool. Yeah. It's been kind of quiet, and plus the great golf over the weekend, which we will get to, I promise. But it was a bizarro world. Like you texted me, I was literally about to leave the house, getting my daughter finalized to take her to daycare, and I get your text. I'm like, I haven't been on Twitter in like 30 minutes because I've been like running around the house. What? I get on it, and I'm like, what in the heck just happened? It was pure chaos.
It was.
But like you said, I think there's a ton we don't know about. And like Duffner, like some of the old school guys have kind of tweeted out little tea leaves to that. I think might like Duffner flat out mentioned the legal stuff is something that I didn't think would want to happen. And that says a lot, because what's Duffner have to lose? He don't give a shit. He's probably pissed. He's like, hey, like those are the guys, like besides the live guys that are the people that didn't take the money, the big pots. Like the Duffners that could have been gotten like, hey, give me like $40 million and I can call it a day. Like that's pretty big boy stuff. We're all focusing on like the $500 million, maybe to Rom or whatever, all these numbers. Let's think about the littler guys that like that could have taken 30, 40 mil and really set themselves up, because they're either going to be out of the tour at 45 because they can't qualify anymore, or they're going to the senior tour, which is fun, but they're not making any money. Right. So like that's a whole nother gamut of things.
Well, and what are you going to do with Liv? What are you going to do with their quote unquote team aspect? What is going to happen with the guys who never had PGA Tour status on Liv?
Yep.
You know, I mean, where do they go? Are they able to go back to the European Tour maybe?
DP Tour is apparently a part of this thing too.
Yeah. It's so complicated. Been left out of
the conversation, like, the whole time.
I feel like they like they were just so excited that they came to an agreement. They're like, well, we have to announce this right now. And just didn't think about any of the fucking details of it. Yeah. Like, it's just bizarre, but
it's really weird.
It was a hell of a golf tournament this week.
Yeah. And we'll get the last thing I'll say is I hope it actually happens now, since all this is, the wheels are in motion, because we get to see the best players play against each other one way or another. There's a lot of ways of how that's going to happen. Still, it's up in the air, like what fees they have to pay, all that kind of stuff. That's all up in the air. But so we'll get to see that. But it's just, it's weird as hell. I hope it happens, because coming back from this, if it doesn't happen, is going to be just pure and utter chaos, worse than before. Like, there's no coming back from this, basically. You'll never gain any players' trust, all these things. It's going to be a disaster of a situation.
Yep.
And as golf fans, it might give us the worst product we've ever seen. So we'll see how that plays out. But yes, this weekend's golf was amazing. The Canadian Open. It was some of the best television I've ever watched for golf in a long, long time. Like, there's always great major golf, and from a non-major event, it was just pure theater. You had Nick Hardy. You know, they haven't had a Canadian win since 1954, which they told you every moment they could on Sunday.
Nick Taylor.
Nick Taylor, sorry, not Nick Hardy, Nick Taylor. Yeah, I better get it right. He comes and wins the darn thing with a 72-foot eagle putt on like the fourth playoff hole.
Yes.
That was insane. You had Tommy Fleetwood just completely shit the bed at the end after making the run to come back, you know, iron to the rough. Then he tries to lay up even a worse spot in the rough. It was just pure horrificness. But then on this, like, I think it was the first playoff hole, he drains a big birdie putt that looked like he was out of it. It was just all over the place. So what are your thoughts on this one? Because you had a bunch of big names up there. You had Nick Taylor taking it down for Canada. You had Adam Hadwin getting speared by a security guard. You just had just – it was just amazing. Absolutely. I wish we had more tournaments like that.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I wish I got to see it. I was on the golf course, and I didn't get home to like 10:30, almost 11 o'clock last night. But, yeah, I mean, you mentioned Nick Taylor last week as a, you know, kind of a dark horse type of dude. I don't know how owned he was, but – talked about Fleetwood, of course, Hatton, fucking Aaron Rye, man.
Yeah, I didn't want to text you that.
Yeah, it's annoying as shit. It was actually a pretty decent leaderboard for.
Yeah, it was.
Rose played well. Rory was, you know, around there. I don't know why Sunday Rory is just terrible, but he is. And Jeff Feinberg had the best week of his life.
Dude, his Twitter was amazing.
It was good all week. Yes, I agree with that. Like,
That's how golf reporting needs to be, by the way. People.
I agree. Like,
he did not care about asking any questions. He didn't care if he got ignored, nothing. He was in there.
Right. Yeah. He did a good job. But the golf course played a little bit tougher than what we thought, too. It's actually a pretty good venue. There's some weird holes out there, like the fourth where you had to let, you was like a forced layup, and then you had to hit fucking five iron from there. So yeah, different golf. The crowds were amazing. Canada really brought it this week, and then of course capped off with one of their own winning the tournament for the first time in 70 years.
It was
pretty
cool.
Pretty cool story.
It was cool to get all the Canadians like by the 18th hole, and then for all the playoff holes.
Hey, not only the Canadians, but like Hatton was there.
I was gonna say,
Rose was there.
It was like by like this, it was like 2.5 holes into the playoffs. They all the Euros rolled in.
Yeah.
And it was really cool to see. They were all just having a good time and supporting their boys. It was Team Hoodie. If you didn't notice, they all had the hoodies on for the hoodie haters out there.
That's why Adam got speared.
Smoked, because he looked like a regular dude. He did. Like, no offense, he looked like if you walked out there with your beard, you put like a, because he didn't have a hat on or anything. Like,
I agree. I agree with you.
Just a regular guy.
But I felt like it was a little bit overblown.
Oh, big time.
Who has what fan has a champagne bottle?
That's the thing. Like, I could see fans like jumping this thing and coming over. Like, there was a dude running down the fairway with the ninth tee flag, and they had to go take back because they had to play that as a third playoff hole. No one cared about that. No one cared that he stole that and was walking around with it. But we got Adam Hadden with the bottle of, like, probably, you know, the best champagne that Canada has to offer.
Yeah. And he gets just absolutely laid out like he's Brock, or he's going against Brock Lesnar in the
it was amazing
ring, man.
It was so good. But I loved everything about it. It's going to be tough to top that even this week, I think. I hope we do. I think it's going to be a great tournament. But it was great golf. It reminds me of, it wasn't an elevated event, but this is why we need cuts. We need to have these players in there with the big dogs, because anything can happen, and it's great golf. It's freaking awesome golf, and they can't cut this crap out. And again, that could change with this merger. Who knows what's going to happen? But and that's another thing, the merger, if they keep the elevated events at a cut, it's going to screw so many more guys out of things. So, yeah, a lot of that goes back to this. You can go back to the merger with everything we talk about if we wanted to. But let's get to the U.S. Open. That's what people probably really care about here. The next major in golf, it's going to be a doozy. We know the histories of the U.S. Open. We'll get to that in a second. But it's going to be a challenging course. It's going to be L.A. Country Club, which we have not seen ever, or at least not since the Walker Cup, which I'm thinking PGA Tour pretty much ever. So what's your past event history, obviously, at different courses?
Yeah. That's the one thing about the U.S. Open is, you know, obviously we're getting a different course every year. Last year, Matt Fitzpatrick, 6-under, one shot over Scottie Scheffler and Will Zalatoris. That was at Brookline, the country club. 2021 was John Rahm, 6-under, one shot over Louis Oosthuizen. I almost forgot about Louis. Torrey Pines was the host that year. 2020 was Bryson DeChambeau, 6-under, six shots over Matthew Wolf at Winged Foot. Gary Woodland won at Pebble in 2019, 13-under, three shots over Brooks. Brooks won back-to-back in 2018, 2017, which is, I mean, this is really bizarre. Plus one was the winning score in 2018 over Tommy Fleetwood at Shinnecock. The year before that, he was 16 under when he actually just demolished Aaron Hills. And that was four shot win over Hideki and Brian Harman. Dustin Johnson, past champion. Jordan Spieth, past champion. Justin Rose, past champion. Rory has won this in the past. Tiger's won it three times.
Yeah, when we're looking at LA Country Club, it's the first, it's the North Course for one, but it's the first time they've had an event since the 1940 LA Open. It's been renovated since then. Gil Hanse renovated it in 2010. Very obviously a popular golf designer, renovator. He's done a lot of renovations lately.
Yep.
It's a wide, it's pretty wide open. It's fun. Jesse and I were talking about it before the show. I got a Golf Channel on now, and they're showing guys, you know, practice rounds, and right out of wrongs just on the, you know, taking shots in the driving range. But it's pretty wide open. The fairways are huge. It's a par 70, 7,421 yards. So it's a long par 70, as you'd expect. It's going to be very interesting because the fairways being so long or so wide, if they, like, you know, dry them out like they should, like they will, because it's the U.S. Open, the ball, like the one thing guys are saying is you don't know where the ball's going to bounce. That's annoying as hell. And I know
that's, we've talked about, it's bizarre.
And we've talked about that on previous U.S. Opens, like after the fact, like, you hit a great golf shot and you still get screwed that bad. Like, you expect the run out because they burn it out, but you don't expect like a ball to hit and then just completely bounce a different direction, especially on a, as well manicured as this course is. You think it would hit normally, at least roll kind of normal for the most part.
Yeah.
That's apparently not going to be the case.
So, I think that quote has been taken a little bit out of context. If you go and watch the no laying up went and played there. So you get to see all 18 holes. You could see him hit tee shots and everything. There's just a lot of sloped fairways. And maybe that's what they're talking about. Like,
that could, you know, because that's Augusta. That's always sloped.
The guy was talking about too, like, you have to, you know, I think it was a superintendent or whoever gave this interview. It was talking about how you have to hit on certain tee shots. You got to hit a draw or a fade because you want it to go, like, you know, obviously if it's sloping left to right, you want to hit a draw into that, and if for a righty, and then the opposite is true for something that's slipping right to left, you want to hit a fade into it just so that way it bounces softer. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's going to be a fair test, and I think, sorry to kind of hop in here, no, but
it's all good.
I think that the defense is around the greens, and it's going to be tough, and it's going to be hard and fast. Looking at we talked about this beforehand. There's no rain in the forecast, 70 degrees every day. Perfect to just do whatever you want to with the golf course.
And if you're watching the Golf Channel in the afternoon, you're going to get a breeze in the afternoon. Like, usually nothing too crazy, but there's going to be enough of a breeze to maybe make things interesting from time to time. Nothing you can really do, because I ain't going to be that way every day, so your wave advantages don't really matter. But just something to keep in mind, that's going to make things fun. And kind of what Jesse was saying is, it's a shot maker's, or again, and part of the interview is it's a thinking man's golf course, because you need to, like, be correct, able to work it from side to side. If you're in the fairway, obviously that's always better. The length here is what's going to make it fun, because most approach shots are going to be, I think I saw somewhere 60% or so from 175 plus. Most will be 200 plus. I saw a clip this morning in Rahm's practice round. He was on a par five. He went five wood, and he still got there in two, but it was literally two fairway woods. You're not seeing a lot of iron shots on that second approach shot. The big thing that stands out to me is most of the par fours are long as heck. They're 450 to 500, some over 500. The final three holes are par fours. I believe two of them are over 500. One's almost 500. It'll be very, very difficult. The par three is ridiculous. I know everyone's seen the 11th now. Par three, 290. Like, dude, I'm not a big hitter. My driver don't go 290. Like, I know I got buddies that you probably could hit your driver 290, but like I'd be lucky to get a bogey on that hole. And no, I'd be so happy.
I would play it as a long par four still.
Yeah. I have a par four in my home course, because in the afternoons it's like thunderous wind here every day, and it plays into the wind. It's literally a 260 yard par four. You can't reach the green in the afternoon. You can't. I got buddies that can hit it 320. They cannot reach the green in the afternoon.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just, and so these par threes are going to be wild. Another one's like 280, 284. So you basically have two at 290. That's just insane to me. So just kind of be happy if they walk away with pars there. The par fives, two are reachable. There's three total par fives. It's six of the par fours are over 480, kind of how I mentioned, three over 505. It's a big boy golf course, as you'd expect, but it's a matter of staying in the fairway. You're fine. Like Jesse mentioned, there's going to be rough, and it's not far off the fairway, but the fairways are so wide. Keep that in mind. The major rough problems, you see the fairway bunkers. That rough around the fairway bunkers is disgusting.
Yeah,
that is like ridiculous stuff. And then, like Jesse mentioned, the most penal rough is around the greens. These greens are pretty big in size, but they're weird formations. Like they have like fingers in spots. There's like they're not perfectly round. Let's put it that way. If you listen to Mayo's pod with Kenny Kim, he's got a great example of one. He calls it the cock and ball hole on 15. So because if you do the overhead, it does look like that. He's right, but they're not like perfectly round greens, but they're big greens. But again, if they're depending on where the pin location is, your accuracy with your approach is tremendously important because you might have a spot where you have to almost chip over another set of rough to get it to where the pin's at. And that makes things interesting. So it's an approach game, as you'd expect on a lot of these courses. There's going to be a lot of roll. But the fun part, the interesting part is, like Jesse mentioned, with the rough around the green, you can't just roll it up there. So that's going to make it a bit challenging as well. So bogey avoidance is going to be tremendous. I still weight driving distance because that's going to obviously affect a lot of things. You need to be accurate, but driving distance is going to be huge. It's approach game, bogey avoidance. It's going to be who's got the strongest mental game in the end, I think, because you're going to have to just grind your ass out and see where it goes. So what are you looking at this week?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a lot of I feel like this is going to be a ball strikers. I mean, it is pretty much every U.S. Open. But I do think the winning score is going to be in the low, like maybe get to six or seven again. Like that's, I think, the top end. Because I do think that this place is just going to be absolutely baked out. So guys who, you know, obviously are good on approach, I think is going to be key. There's going to be a lot of less than drivers around this place. And then scrambling is going to matter quite a bit. And bogey avoidance, just like with every U.S. Open. I just don't see this being another Aaron Hills.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. The one other thing I forgot to mention, not a ton of trees. They're there. There's no water at all. There's no water on the course at all. So you got that going for you. And there's these, you're going to hear it a million times, barrancas, however you want. I call them barrancas out here. It's basically like, think TPC Scottsdale when they hit it into the desert. It's just old like riverbeds that are dried out, but they might have different vegetation in them, but you can play out of them. We have a course, Pebble's got like six courses. It's called the Pebble Beach Resort area or whatever. There's courses that I can afford to play there. Like really, like the NCGA, their headquarters is at Poppy Hills. There's barrancas all over that freaking thing. And it's, some aren't that bad. Some are annoying as hell. So I'm assuming most of these will be annoying as hell. Just throw it out. But with that being said, let's have some fun and talk some DK pricing on this slate. It's major field, so you know the drill. A lot of great players. We price cheaper than usual, but we have the big dogs up top. We have five guys at 10K and above. Scotty Scheffler at 11.4, John Rahm at 11.1, Brooksy 10.8, Cantlay 10.3, Hovland 10,000. I'll just say this much. Scheffler's one, Rahm's two in my model.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, obviously they're the top two players in the world for a reason. I like Scotty this week. I hope people still like are upset about his putter and the fact that he's just awful putting. He does have the same putter in the bag, according to, I think it was Rick Grungood on Twitter. He was following him around today, and he's still putting with the same putter. So, but it's not, I mean, knock on wood, I don't think it's going to be a putting fest this week. So I like Scotty quite a bit. He's number one in my model. Rahm, obviously. I mean, but how did we not play Brooks at a little bit of a discount there? I just worry about a little bit about the ownership, but you know, in the last few weeks, man, I've just thrown ownership out the window and just played the guys that I wanted to. I mean, like last week, I probably had three guys over 20% and I got six out of six and, you know, doubled my money. So, you know, it works out just fine. Cantlay, I think, is okay, but Hovland at 10,000, you know, the guy's just coming in with wonderful form. So for me here, it's Scotty, Brooks, Victor. But just like every other week, I wouldn't talk anybody off playing anybody up here if that's who you want to play. I mean, you could play a little bit of the ownership game, I think, with maybe Cantlay, but we'll see.
Yeah, right now, Cantlay is projected to be the lowest rostered in this range. All great plays. I'm really curious to see how the roster rates shake out. Whereas we're recording on Monday, because Scotty and Rom should be the top two for a very good reason, obviously.
Yeah.
But Brooks is right there with them in projected ownership because people are starting to realize that Brooks is still very, very good after his last two major performances.
Right.
And I don't see that changing. He owns US. Like, these are venues that play into his strengths even more than the ones he already wins.
Right.
So I guess is a Brooks paradise. And plus, I forgot to mention the Playboy Mansion's behind the 15th area. So you got that going for you too. So there's all kinds of fun that Brooks could have on this golf course. But yeah, I you can't go wrong here. I think Cantlay's interesting. He's played, you know, 13th in my model. He's first off the tee, first in the par fours, 450 to 500. He's eighth in bogey avoidance. He's only Scheffler's better than him in this grouping in the last 24 rounds. So something to think about with Cantlay. He's kind of a slow plotter. Like, if you think of tough golf courses, the Memorial, Cantlay always plays really well. That's a very tough golf course. And so that could be something that could play into his favor. But I'm with you. It's the big three up top. It'd be really interesting to see how Cantlay and Hovland kind of shake out in the ownership game, because they're all very talented. And Hovland's been playing great, especially in the majors of late, so you can't ignore that at all. 9K range, you got Rory at 99, Xander 96, Homa 94 is going to be super popular, I think. Morikawa 93, Spieth 92, Fitz 91, and Cam Smith at 9,000. How are you looking at this range?
Yeah, Xander's very much playable at 96.
He's actually projected to be the most popular here. Holy crap.
Is he really?
Yeah, I was so shocked by that.
You know, Memorial 24th, PGA Championship 18th, both really tough places to play there. Wells Fargo is another one to finish second. I mean, just coming in great form. Max Homa, though, is the guy that I think that I'm really going to target this week. And it's simply a narrative street, West Coast guy. I think he owns the course record here.
Record here, yes.
Is that since the redesign, I would assume?
Yeah, it was during the Walker Cup, which was after the redesign. I'm pretty sure. Gotcha. No, yeah, I think it was after the redesign. Yeah. I have to double check. Don't quote me, but I think so, yes.
So Max Homa, the form coming in is not really ideal, but it's a home game for him, coming off a ninth place finish at the Charles Schwab, which was his last start. He did make the cut of the PGA Championship, not great. But Max, I feel like we're going to be able to get a little bit less ownership there. And then I'm skipping the next three. You can take Fitzpatrick if you want. I'm going to click Cameron Smith. The ninth place finish at the PGA Championship, 34th at the Masters. So two made cuts this year, two pretty solid starts for Cam. And if it's more of like a short game type of place where it comes down to putting and chipping, I mean, Cam's one of the best in the world. So yep. I like him at 9,000.
Yeah, and if you're using like Augusta as a good comp course, you, obviously Cam loves playing at Augusta. So yeah. That's a great call there. I think Cam's just fine. I'll keep going to Fitz. Fitz actually projected to be the lowest owned in this range. Below 10%, which would be very surprising to me. He only won the U.S. Open last year, which is, I guess, tough to do. He's 30th in my model, but we're talking about a guy that's driving distance continues to get better and better. Really doesn't have a real weakness unless you're talking about like 100 to 125, which hopefully he's not there very often. If you think about the layoff of this course, just a slow and steady guy, maybe better for a cash game, but I think if it's a 7-under type tournament like Jesse's talking about, that's his wheelhouse. So I'm a big fan of Fitz in this one. I think Homa, you know, it's California, it's Homa time, so I'm with you there. But Spieth is one that's starting to get interesting with me, just for the way, you know, I was worried about his wrist forever, but fifth at the Memorial I thought was huge, 29th at the PGA. That fifth of the Memorial stands out to me in a big way, saying Spieth might be getting things back. He might be getting healthy, took last week off. He's a great guy when it comes to bogey avoidance. He's 10th in this field. His approach game is tremendous. He's a wizard around the greens. A guy, if anybody can get hot with a putter, it's Spieth. You know, the approach game can be the bugaboo from time to time. So that'll be the one to watch. Plus, if we're talking about a mental game, that could get a little nasty with Spieth. But I think him at 92 is one I don't mind as well. But Fitz and the Cam Smith are probably my two favorites in this range if I have to narrow it down. 8K range, you got Hatton at 89, who just continues to play amazing golf. Finau at 88, JT at 87, Matsuyama 86, Lowry 85, Sungjae 84, DJ 83 is still too cheap to me. Burns 82, Day 81, Cam Young 8,000. What do you like in this range?
Yeah, Tyrell there at 8,900. Dude, I mean, that was a crazy week for him last week. Shoots even par, 8-under, even par, 8-under.
And he had a double on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, on 8, yeah. I mean, it's the putter was working. I like Tyrell quite a bit at 8,900. Hideki at 86 is another guy I think is very playable. 16th place at the Memorial 29th at the PGA Championship. And then, yeah, DJ at 83. I know he's not really had a great showing this year as far as his majors go, 55th and 48th in the two majors so far this year. But I think he's just dumb enough to be okay at this golf course. So I feel like you got to be either really, really smart, like a Phil level smart, or DJ level dumb.
Yep, just grip it and rip it and see where I go. Just know that I am more talented than most of this field. Let's see what we can do.
Right. I mean, I think he's going to make the cut. I think he's a pretty safe play as far as that goes. Now, is he going to win? That's a different story, but
$8,300, he doesn't have to win.
Yep, so right, correct.
It's beautiful. I'm with you on Hatton at 89. The dude just keeps balling out. Love everything about him. I'm looking forward to a broken putter at some point in time, which will be a great time on this golf course, but I do like Hatton at 89. I agree with you. Matsuyama is one of my, like, I love him all the time at these tougher events. And if you want to use the Augusta comp, he's eighth in my model. He's eighth in approach, ninth in proximity over 200, fifth in bogey avoidance, fifth in proximity, even 175 to 200. So all the stuff you're looking for, he's great. Not a big bomber of the golf ball, but with an approach game like that, you don't have to be. I like Matsuyama quite a bit at $8,600. DJ at 83, I had checked off. The one other guy I had checked off here is Tony Finau. He's seventh in my model. 10th on approach, 4th from 200 plus. The only thing he's really struggled with over the last 24 rounds is putting. His results just don't show it. He feels like one of those guys similar to Scotty that obviously Scotty's way better. I'm not comparing the two. But if just Finau can putt better this week, he'll be right there at $8,800 paying off that price tag in a big, big way. So I think he's quite interesting at that price point. And right now, a bunch of the guys we didn't mention are all, like we mentioned, I guess the most popular guys in the range. So that sums that up.
Yeah, good. Typically, yes, as is per the usual. Yes.
But I agree your comment earlier about I don't care about the chalk that much anymore. I'll mention it because there is a little strategy to that, but I'm not as focused anymore as I used to be. Yeah, 79 to 75, you got Fleetwood, Connors, Tom Kim, Rose, Neiman, Keegan, Bryson, Thigala, Clark, Fowler, Adam Scott, and Patty Reed. Another fun range here. What do you like in this range?
Yeah, I mean, this feels like the normal 8K range, doesn't it, in a major? Yep. There's a lot to like here. Fleetwood, obviously, off the second place finish last week. It surprisingly, you know, I think putted pretty decently and just couldn't hit his irons, which is not normal for him. Corey Connors, ball striker. We all know how good a ball striker he is. 20th last week. 12th at the Memorial earlier this year, did miss the cut as major chalk at the Masters. I absolutely love Justin Rose at 7,700 this week. 8th, 12th, 9th in his last three starts, playing really good golf. When you think about U.S. Open, you kind of think Keegan, don't you? I mean,
I haven't checked out.
It's hard not to play him. He's made the cut in both majors this year, finished in the top 30 in both majors. He's just like, to me, a cut maker type of dude. Bryson, I mean,
I'm torn on him. I didn't check him off, but I could see the arguments. If you're doing a 20 max, I'd probably have like five at least.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think he's worth the gamble. Mm-hmm. If you got 150, you know, I'd probably put him on 30 or something. But he's worth the gamble because it's going to go one or two ways. He's going to make it. He's going to top 10 and pay off his price massively, or he's going to miss the cut.
Yep.
That's the only two ways that I see this tournament going for Bison. Absolutely love Adam Scott.
Yep.
Give me all the Adam Scott at this price. He's probably going to be 20,000% owned. I don't care. 9th, 29th, 8th, 5th in his last four starts, playing really good. And if you talk about long iron game, Adam Scott traditionally, you know, has some of the best long irons in his bag. Ricky Fowler playing really well right now. Two straight top 10s for him. Did have that one missed cut where I decided I was going to play him at the PGA Championship. So just be forewarned that I'm probably going to play him this week. I'll probably do three lineups and I'll have at least one there with Ricky. And last but not least, man, Patrick Reed at 75. You know, this year in his two starts in the two majors, 18th and 4th, he's the type of guy who has the short game. And if it's kind of spray, you know, if you're able to kind of hit your driver a little bit off target, you know, I feel like this might be an okay place for him. So Patrick Reed at 7,500, there's just so much to like here. I like this range way more than I do the 8K range.
100% with you on this one. I have a lot of this range checked off. I'll even go back to Fleetwood, $7,800, just because he's a great outside of the 18th hole on Sunday. He's third in this field in bogey avoidance. He's very, very good at that. His approach game is overall pretty decent around the green. He's pretty strong. We did see that over the weekend, especially in the playoff holes. The around the green game saved him to prolong it as long as he did. At his price tag, I think there's a lot to like there. Connors, I'm 100% with you on that. He had a horrible Sunday, like a really bad Sunday. I think he shot like 3 or 4 over par on Sunday. So go back to him. I'm with and Rose. Rose is third in my model. That's how much I like Justin Rose, and the model likes him as well. Fifth in approach over the last 24 rounds. Fourth on the par fours, 450 to 500. Sixth on proximity, 200+. He's 17th in bogey avoidance. And one thing he doesn't do great are long par threes, so keep that in mind. But if he does the other, take the bogeys on those two, clean up on the rest, he'll be okay.
Right.
Like that's the one thing is I'm not, as long as it's a bogey, I'm okay with my guys getting bogeys on those par threes. Just don't have doubles and triples. Like, right. Cool. Because that's going to be such, even just the par for the pros will be difficult on that.
Those yes.
So Rose at $7,700. I like Neiman at 77 is interesting as well, because I know these stats are skewed because he hasn't been playing a ton, but when he's on, we're talking about a dude with good proximity numbers. He's got a decent approach game. Neiman was, you know, obviously elevating himself to be a beast at one point in time. If you look at PGA Championship, he missed a cut, 16th of the Masters, though. I like that quite a bit. And, you know, before he went to live, he was 11th on the tour, 8th on PMW. But just this year, at 16th of the Masters is pretty nice looking to me. After Neiman, I do have Keegan. This is a guy I talk about almost every time we play a challenging long golf course. This is what he does. He grinds his ass off. He avoids bogeys, and he just finds his way to the cut and maybe makes a run at one point in time. He's really good on the long par threes. So I like Keegs at 76. Wyndham Clark's interesting. He's sixth in my model. He really, you know, third in approach. He's fourth on the 1 to 125. He's second in bogey avoidance. Never would have guessed that with Wyndham Clark. And he's third in proximity, 175 to 150, I mean, to 200, I mean. So Wyndham Clark at 75 could be one that maybe gets a little overlooked in this range. And then I'm with you. Adam Scott is too cheap for the way he's playing. Him and Rose are both too cheap in this range. And Patty Reed, I love at 75, because if you're talking about just grind your ass off golf course, that's Patty Reed in a nutshell. He's 15th of bogey avoidance. That's what he does. Yep. He just grinds off. He's sixth in 175 to 200. He's going to hopefully keep it in the fairway, and then he's going to around the green magic type guy. So I like Patty Reed at 75. 7K to 74, what do you like him?
Siwoo at 73, probably not really good at bogey avoidance, but he's got really good iron game. Victor Perez at 73 as well, mostly playing European Tour golf, but did play at the PGA Championship, finished 12th there. Russell Henley, 7,100, just a ball striker. Two straight top 16 finishes for him on tour. He did miss the cut at the PGA Championship, but finished fourth at the Masters. Ryan Fox, 7,100 as well. The form coming in is pretty good. 30th, 21st, 23rd, 26th in his last four starts. The 23rd place finish was at the PGA Championship. He did not play the Masters this year. Justin Suh at 71 as well. Three straight made cuts for him, and he had made a bunch in a row before the Byron Nelson, where he missed the cut, finished 26th at the PGA Championship. Austin Ekroth at 7,000. You know, I feel like he's kind of a peripheral type of guy, but I could see him making the cut and finishing, you know, inside the top 40. Vincent Norman, coming off a missed cut last week, but before that was 48th, 8th, 18th. So $7,000 down there is worth a shot.
Yeah, I don't mind the Siwoo call. I got him checked off. Vic Perez as well, because most people look at his stats and don't realize how good he's been in Europe. But Mito at 72 is one I will take a shot at. At the PGA, finished 18th, 43rd at the Masters. We know how well he plays in these tough conditions. These PGAs are not easy golf courses either. So I think Mito is one I can get behind at 72. Cam Davis at $7,200 is one that's just tilting my face off right now. We know we've had this on this show. We've discussed it many, many times on what Cam Davis can and can't do well. If you like, you look at his recent results, miscut at the Memorial, miscut at the Charles Schwab, fourth at the PGA. Like, what are we doing right now?
Yeah.
And then you just look at his, you look at he's 17th in my model. He's 11th off the tee, 19th in long par threes. He's 11th in approach, 200 plus. Great driving distance, but he sprays it. I guess that's a tilting one. I think Gary Woodland plays very well here for me. He's 24th in my model. He's a guy that proximity 175 to 200, he's the best in the field. He's 30th and 200 plus. Good at bogey avoidance. So I like Woodland at 72. Denny McCarthy at 72 has my attention because usually he has a pretty good approach game. You know, coming off a couple weeks ago where he kind of he had that moment, just didn't finish it. So McCarthy's interesting at 72. I like Ryan Fox a lot at 71. Justin Suh. A couple other guys. Eric Cole at 7,000 is playing amazing golf right now. He had a great week again last week, had a great Sunday. Finished 6th, 24th at the Memorial, missed cut at Schwab, 15th at the PGA, 23rd at the Byron Nelson. So Eric Cole's a dude. He's 25th on my model. Griot is another guy. Good in the proximity and approach game. Bogey avoidance, 68th. It's not ideal, but keep an eye on him. Minwoo Lee at 7,000. He's played really good at the Masters, and the driving distance game is big for him. And the last guy I'll mention, and this is tilting because he has not played great, but he did qualify for the U.S. Open, and he's only $7,000 is Sergio Garcia. I'm going to just say, if you're looking for a guy to grind it out, make the cut. If I want to stick to my Augusta comps, obviously he plays Augusta well. Missed a cut this year, though. But this is a guy that I could see at 7,000 just grinding it out. I could also see him ejecting completely. So keep that in mind with Serge. Not a must play, but one I would be interested in seeing how that one plays out. Maybe having a few of a 20 max or so. 6K, what do you like in here?
Yeah, Michael Kim at 6,900. Did you see his tweet this week? He's
an amazing Twitter follow.
Yeah, he's got a pretty good Twitter game.
He's awesome. Yeah. I've seen it all. Like every day he's got something. He's awesome, yes.
Did you see the picture, though, where they had put him – somebody had
– Oh, yeah, put a picture tweet. Of – was it Siwoo?
Yeah.
One of these days, so what do I have to do? Like, what event do I have to win to have to put my right picture?
He's trending, though. I mean, he's playing really well here recently. 43rd, 6th, miscut, 7th, 30th, 46th, 26th. So, Adam Schenck at 6,800, back-to-back made cuts for him, 7th and 2nd. In his last two starts, pretty solid. I hate the rest of this range. I don't like anybody really any below Schenck. I don't know. I mean, like Munoz, Maronk, maybe Padraig Harrington. I'm not going to play him though. Let's be real. Sam Bennett, maybe. It's just, I mean, because you're getting into some AMs down there and stuff and people who qualified. So that's about it for me.
Yeah, I have Michael Kim. I like him a lot. Streelman, the more I looked into him, surprised me. He's 25th in my model. He's not a world beater by any means, but, you know, he's still like 50th in proximity, 200 plus. He's great at bogey avoidance. That's the thing that really stood out to me. If you just look at recent results for Streelman, that's what really kind of surprised me with him. Where did Streels go? He's right here. Missed cut of the Memorial, 9th at the Charles Schwab, 18th at the Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo, if I think really tough golf courses, like obviously missed cut of the Memorial, tough course, but Wells Fargo is a long ass golf course. And that stood out to me when with Streelman. Again, not a must. I probably have Michael Kim over him, but I do think he's one to keep in mind. I want to play P. Raj this week. He's 39th in my model. He's 12th.
He's got some history here too, right?
He's a West Coaster. He's a 12th in the par fours, 450 to 500. Long par threes, he's 30th. He's 20th in one. Like his approach game, he checks all of those boxes. He's 31st in bogey avoidance. He looks interesting to me at $6,900. I'm going to be totally honest with you. So that's one. I don't think I can keep going to my boy Carson Young this week. I think I'm going to have to wait on that one. I checked him off just so I could mention that because I've played him like religiously of late. I think I'm going to have to take a breather on that one.
Yeah, but I think it's time to relax on Carson. Just
take a step back there on that one. I like Adam Schenck at 68 a lot. That's a very good one. Kurt Kitayama is a GPP flyer in a big way here. This is a guy that can pipe his drive. This is a guy that's approach game is pretty darn solid. This is a guy that can be sporadic as hell at the same time. But he won it API. Yeah, he won the API. And
they missed four straight cuts.
Yep, but we've seen
and
him
then finish fourth at the PGA.
That's my thing. You see him show up these big fields. Dude. In a GPP, like, and I could be totally wrong, but I feel like Kitayama was a UCLA guy. I could be wrong.
Let's find out. We'll find out.
But I don't have that info in front of me, but maybe Jesse's got it. I feel like I'm just spitballing. Like, we're in the 6K range. This is like, let's throw some darts. Kitayama's a dart. And I think there's like total boomer bust appeal with Kitayama. My boy Sam Stevens down here at 66. He's 27, still in my model. Like he's making cuts. So you can look at Sammy Stevens if you want. I got Sam Bennett down here, like you said, but not an overall great range.
He's from Sacramento.
That's what he's at. He went to, Chico.
Yeah,
that's what it was. That's Northern California. That's about. I grew up close to Sacramento. He's about.
He went to UNLV.
UNLV, so Vegas, West Coast. Yep. So we're close.
Yeah. That's West Coast. Vegas is West Coast.
Yeah, that's West Coast. So yeah, I knew there was, a Chico thing I was thinking of. So yeah, I think there's something there with Kitayama. Boomer bust tournament play. Like, let's YOLO that one.
I like it.
All right, let's recap things for you. 10K and above, who you got? You got to pick one.
Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah. I'll go Brooks. BDB.
I like it. I was getting ready to say his name, but I just cannot not say Scottie.
If Brooks could win back to back, oh God. If we thought the party he went on for a week after last one, oh boy. And Jenna's pregnant, like, oh, party time. All right, 9K range, who you got?
Max.
And by the way, Father's Day's on Sunday, so like, how perfect would a Brooks W be? Just throwing it out there. There's a lot of guys we could say that, but how great would that be?
Yeah, so it'd be something.
So sorry, you say Max in the 9K range?
Max, correct.
Yeah, he has had a kid too, or his wife did a little while ago. I like that. I will go with Cam Smith at 9,000. 8K range.
Terrell.
That is good. I will go with Hideki at 86. 75 to 79.
Rosen Scott.
Fuck you. yeah, those are the two to pick, people. Rosen Scott. I guess if I had to put a third one out there, I'll go Joaquin Neiman at 77. 7K to 7. I'm just picking all the live guys, apparently. 7K to 74.
You sound like Tim Anderkes.
Don't say it. I knew you were going. God damn it.
I'm going to say Siwoo.
Yeah, it's not bad. I won't say me too. I won't take all of them. In this range, I'll actually go with that's tough. I'll go with Gary Woodland. I'll take that experience on his side because on this area here. And then 6K, I'm going Kitayama. I'm just going to put it there.
I like it.
Take Michael
Kim. I'll take Michael Kim.
Yeah. But P-Rod is also one, folks. Just keep an eye on that one. I think Kitayama is the guy we could see in the top 10 because it's going to be boom or bust. Rodgers could like make the cut and then 8 over on Sunday and finish like 55th. Like, that's where I see that one playing out. And weirdly enough, Rodgers is like 7% projected, which is like the highest in this entire range. I don't know where that came from, but wow, that's impressive. Michael Kim at 0.1%. Got that going for you. And then where's Kitayama? 4.2. He's got a little steam behind him.
Really?
Too. Yeah, that surprises me. All right.
Me and you both.
If you're building the cash lineup this week, and it's risky because like literally the 6 of 6 range will be super, like 4 or 6s will cash this week. Just keep that in mind.
Probably.
So cash might not be that bad actually in the grand scheme of things, but where would you go in cash?
Rose, Scott, and Keegan.
I would go Rose and Scott for sure. And to be a little different, I guess, Rose, Scott, give me an 8K. I go Hideki, Rose, Scott, Hideki. That's where I go on this one. If you're starting your tournaments, though, where are you going?
Scotty, Max Homa, and Ryan Fox.
I will go with Rose, Scott, and Cam Smith. That's where I will start things out. All right. This is the fun one, and this would be a fun week to do top 20s and top 40s or a miss the cuts and all that kind of stuff as well. A lot of prop bets this week. But who you got winning this thing? Scotty 7-1, Rom 9-1, yeah. Lead the way, Brooks 11-1.
It's fucking stupid odds, man. I mean, Brooks at 11's got a little bit of value there. I mean, really, he should be, in my opinion, probably the same as Scotty and John as far as the betting board goes. You know, Max is 28, not terrible there. Finau at 40, not awful. Bison at 40. Yeah, I mean, P. Reed at 70.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Scott at 70. Assuming that this turns into just like kind of a 5-6 under par type of week. It's just, if that's the case, I think it's going to be hard to beat Scottie Scheffler though.
Yep, because even if he's not putting great, he'll avoid the bogeys. Like, right. That's where he'll just – and he'll have one hot day out of the four. Like, that's what he'll do. He does it every major tournament.
And he's probably got the best caddy out there, you know.
Yeah, it keeps him on the up and up. And you don't have to worry about him going out and having a little too many the night before.
Like, no.
This guy goes straight back to his hotel
room. Coffee. He won't even drink coffee in the morning.
No, he's going straight back to his hotel room, and he's going to, like, watch some clips of his swing and go to bed. Like, that's what
– him and his wife are probably watching some – Netflix show.
They're doing Bible study and then going to bed. I think some other guys maybe. Where did he go? I was just looking at him. I just blanked out. Cam Smith, he's 25-1. I think that's got a little bit of life to it as well. I just don't know if Rosie has enough to win, but 40-1 is nice. I just don't know if he's got the dub in him or not, the whole, because even at the Canadian Open, he struggled on Sunday. And that was just, he just really kind of lost it. He still finished well, but he struggled there. I like the Reed and Scott calls there if you're looking for longer shots. And Mito and Neiman, 80 and 90. That's interesting. But again, those are both Anderkirst, as you've mentioned. So keep that in mind. But yeah, after I'm just kind of scrolling the post. Kitayama's 180-1. He's plus 1100 to top 10. So if you want to get risky here, folks, do a little dance. This place, top 20 number's got to be pretty sweet. So keep that in mind. But yeah, well, there's top 30s, top 40s. You know, all kinds of fun in this tournament.
Yeah.
Major golf, betting opportunities galore. Sure. We'll wrap it up there. Any final thoughts as we head into the U.S. Open?
I don't, man. It's going to be a great week, especially for us East Coasters, because the coverage is going to go till 11 o'clock every night.
Yep. You guys are locked in because, yeah, the first tee time will be like 7-ish my time out here, which is 10-ish your time.
10 my time. Yeah. So it's going to be all day and it's going to go into the evening, which is wonderful for those who like to play golf on Father's Day.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll be able to recap on Monday and Jessica, yes, I got to actually watch that.
The first fucking tournament I've watched in 2 months. No shit. That's not Thursday, Friday, you know. Yeah. I don't have any golf plans this week. So
there you go.
I might just sit around and watch golf all week.
Not a bad move. I hope it's the challenge. I hope it's like the PGA personally. Like, it's challenging, but if you play well, you don't get screwed. That's all. Yeah,
5-6 under par.
I'm all about that. Like, let's do it. Let's hope we have a fun week. Course looks beautiful. Hope they don't completely destroy it, but they will have some fun with it, of course. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how much fun, because it took a long time for the members at LA Country Club to okay this. And I don't think they want their course to get destroyed. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But we'll be back to recap that next week and get you ready for another elevated event at the Travelers. So we got that coming up for us at a loaded field next week. Find out Jesse on Twitter at DFS Golf God, the podcast at Always Press DFS. I am at B. Dendrick, and until next time, this was your Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast previewing the 2023 U.S. Open.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.